I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete. It is one, and it is the final hour of Grant and Danny. Just kicked off here on 106.7 The Fan. So the Redskins' tight end position on paper looks like it's a bit of a mess. The depth chart is not all that pretty. Jeremy Sprinkle, as of right now, you'd have to think is their number one. You know, Hill Henches, who played at Alabama and made the team last year and caught a couple passes, is still around. And they went out and they addressed, I guess in air quotes, a need at the position by bringing in Logan Thomas, who caught around 20 passes last year, and Richard Rodgers, who didn't really play much last year, but who used to play in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, with the Packers. So I decided, you know, rather than just kind of discussing that group with what we've seen and what we know, I'd have one of the smartest analysts of football and film studying lads that I know, who played in the NFL for 10 years, to watch some of the film and look over what he sees from those guys when he watches them play and talks to people around the league to discuss the Redskins' tight end position. And right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Logan Paulson joins us to do just that. Logan, I miss calling XFL games with you, man. Those darn Defenders, we should be still calling their games each weekend right now.
I know. I keep getting the update on my calendar each week, so I'm always like a little tear comes to my eye every time I see that.
How do I fix that, by the way? You're right. I keep, like, every night when the Caps are supposed to play, I guess I just need to delete everything from my calendar.
Nationals, Marlins. Nope.
It's depressing all over again when I see that. It's no good.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Absolutely.
Put you to work, though, and ask you if you would watch some film. I know it's kind of a hobby and something you like to do anyway. So what's the best way to do this, to go player by player and kind of divide it that way? You tell me.
Well, I think if we went by kind of like the team of the Redskins and needs and stuff, because in the course of my research, I discovered that a lot of people were like, oh, you know, Logan Thomas isn't a starter. The Sprinkle experiment has failed, blah, 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 blah. So I think it's important to understand kind of where the Redskins are, you know. And everyone's like, oh, they're going to draft some guy. And in my opinion, this is a very weak tight end draft. There are some good players, but they've all kind of got flaws to their game. So I don't think you're going to find a guy in this year's draft necessarily that's going to come in and be the guy for you. You know what I mean? And I just think there's so many other kind of, I don't want to say glaring, but big need spots on the offense especially. And then, you know, defensively, they need to draft a DB. And those picks will probably come higher. And then you're going to get a guy maybe later in the draft at the tight end position that isn't going to be like a world beater, but maybe has some traits and some skills that can come in right away. So that being said, what I like that the Redskins have done is they go out and they find a guy like Logan Thomas, a guy who is on an ascending trajectory. He is improving each season that he plays. You know, he played quarterback at Virginia Tech. And every season he gets a little bit better. He gets a little bit more comfortable, like last year in Detroit. You know, he's not a perfect player necessarily, but they move him around. They line him up in the backfield. They line him up in the slot. They line him up at wide receiver. And when you talk to position coaches in the NFL, they always say how important that positional flexibility is in the modern-day NFL. You know, like you want a guy who can block, but you also don't want a guy who's going to be hand in the dirt and can't do anything else. So I think he gives you that. You know, he ran like a 4.66 at the combine, which would have been the second fastest time for tight ends this year. He's got nice long arms, big tall kid. He's a little tight in the hips, but I'm excited about what I see from him on tape in terms of room for growth. He's 29 years old. I know that's a little late in the game, but he hasn't been playing the position that long. So to me, the Redskins went a little bargain bin shopping and found somebody who could be something. Like, I see like a poor man's Greg Olsen in Ron Rivera's offense, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And here's what I want to get to with Logan Thomas before we get to the other guys. Everywhere he's been, it's either been, you know, he's an afterthought or a project. In Buffalo, there's Charles Clay, who's a pretty established tight end who was pretty good. And then Detroit last year drafts T.J. Hockenson pretty high. And they've also got some other pretty established weapons there on the outside for what should have been Stafford and company. Is there a chance he's better than we think?
I personally, from what I've seen, I think yes. You know, they paid Jesse James a ton of money to go be the number two there, a lot of money. And by the end of the season, Logan Thomas was playing over him, you know, in certain situations. And I think that speaks to the kind of player that he is and what Detroit saw in him. You know, like, he is a big athlete. Like, that's the way the position's going. Big athletes that give you offensive flexibility. You know, you don't know how to cover him. You don't know who to match up with him. And that being said, he's not like a soft guy. He's a pretty physical player. He's not perfect in the run game, but he throws his body in there. You know, he gave Ryan Kerrigan a concussion last year. Like, everyone's seen that play. But even kind of in addition to that, like, his inline stuff is not bad. And so to me, I think he's better than people think. I think he's more competitive than people think. And I think that is that's exciting. You know what I mean?
How about the two guys that were already here when you watch them? Give me a thought on Sprinkle, you know, who just hasn't really taken to this offense or this team like he was expected to out of Arkansas. And then also Hill Henches, who started to catch a couple balls by the end of the year. What do you see from them?
So, yeah, what I see is, you know, like, Sprinkles, I think he had his struggles last year. And to be fair, like, this, the offense that the Redskins were running last year is really challenging for, like, a traditional blocking Y. Like, a guy like myself who's almost 280 pounds and runs a 5-flat 40, like, I would excel in the run game in this office. Like, that's not who Sprinkle is. He's 255. He's 6'6". He's a little bit more lithe and a little more athletic. They were kind of, I think, trying to fit a square peg into a round hole a little bit, and I think that led to some of his kind of, I don't want to say poor play, but, like, kind of subpar play in the run game specifically.
Will he
and
fit
pass
better in Rivera's offense, do you think? Or I should say Scott Turner's?
So I'm a big believer that, like, you know, Sean McVay told me one time, 95% of your roster is scheme, right? You know, there's four or five guys who can play on any team and be, you know, a Pro Bowl player. I think Trent Williams is one of those guys. But most other guys are scheme, right? So I don't think Sprinkles fits in with this scheme. But I will say, like, if he is willing, and he's shown that he is a somewhat willing blocker, you know, like, to improve his technique and to improve some other areas, maybe get a little stronger in the weight room, I do think he could be successful. I also think, you know, kind of taking advantage of what he does well in the pass game is really important. You know, like, he is he's not the most sudden guy, like, twitchy guy necessarily, but he runs well for how big he is. He catches the ball, like, at the high point nicely. Like, not all the time, but he has that skill set. And I do see, like, there is a potential. I see why they've kind of stuck with him for as long as they have, you know, the Redskins. Like, he has some traits. Like, yes, is he at times really frustrating to watch? Absolutely. But I do think there are some traits there that could allow him to grow and become a much better player. You know, and I think that kind of transitions to Rodgers, you know, the other tight end they signed. Like, there's another example of a guy who's been hurt a little bit, but has played a lot of good football. So to me, I see him as, like, if the Sprinkles thing doesn't work with Ron Rivera and that offense and this new staff, they have a guy who's played a lot of football, caught some balls in the NFL, and is a really solid kind of in-between FY tight end that gives you some flexibility on offense if the Sprinkles thing doesn't work out.
What about Henches? Because he's the guy we know the least about.
So Henches, to me, I have a soft spot in my heart for guys like Henches. Like, he's a little outmatched at times, you know, athletically. But he plays really, really hard, and I love that about guys. And the way he plays, I think, makes up for a lot of, like, his lack of measurables, if that makes sense. Like, he's always willing to kind of throw his face in there. He's not going to be your third down guy, but he, in my opinion, with some training, could be a three, maybe someday be a two if he gets a little bit bigger. But, like, I like him kind of because he reminds me of myself a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, he's an overachiever, and I love guys like that, guys who kind of carve their own way into the NFL and write their own story, so to speak. So I love that about him. You know, I don't know how he is on teams. I wasn't able to watch any of that stuff. But in terms of, like, what he does in the run game, you know, like, when he comes up against a bigger, stronger, faster dude, like, it's going to be a tough matchup for him, but he's always willing to fight. He's not going to go down without a fight. I love that about his play style.
Logan Paulson with us here on Grant and Danny, breaking down the tight end spot for the Redskins. Let's get back into Rodgers. He's, if there is such a thing, the most accomplished of this group, the only guy with a 58-catch, 510-yard, 8-touchdown season in Green Bay a handful of years ago. Never the number one option, it seems like, in terms of tight end play. And then, of course, the injuries here recently. Tough to crack the tight end lineup that Philly had the last couple of seasons, so I don't blame him there. But what are your thoughts when you see him recently versus what he had a few years ago when he was in his early 20s?
So, to me, he's a guy that, like, is kind of going back to the scheme problem, right? When they brought him in, he was brought in under to be a certain kind of player, you know? And then they wanted him to be more of a traditional Y, you know? And in my opinion, he's, again, one of these guys that's not a traditional Y and he's not a traditional F. Like, he's a good athlete and he's competitive in the run game, which is more than you can ask for in a lot of cases. But I think they were, when you're kind of the jack of all trades, master of none, a lot of scouting departments say, oh, we can upgrade this position. And so then they go out and they get a guy like Mercedes Lewis, who is a prototypical blocking Y tight end. And I don't care who you are, like, you're not going to be able to compete with a guy who's 6'6", 280 pounds, and runs a 4.8 40. You know what I mean? Like, he's just built to do that better than you are. And I think that's kind of why he kind of fell out. And they, you know, they signed Jimmy Graham in Green Bay when he was there because they said, oh, we can upgrade. We can improve in these areas. And I think he's a solid player. Like, and that's not a dig. That's a compliment. Like, he's a guy who can do a lot of stuff. He can play fullback. He can play in line. He can do a little bit in the slot and out wide if you need him to. Like, that's him. You know, obviously he hasn't played a lot of the last couple of years because of injuries and the tight end situation in Philly. But to me, like, based on his history, like, he's exciting to me in a different way. You know what I mean? Because he does all these different things. And I feel like a coach like Ron Rivera, like, to me, sprinkles should be aspiring to be what Rodgers was. You know what I mean? A guy who can do both relatively well. Runs okay, catches the ball well, and is okay in the run game. And so, like, having a guy who is what Sprinkles should be, I think is going to help Sprinkles. And also, like, if Sprinkles doesn't work out, I think it helps the offense and it helps the team. And, you know, he's been around a little bit. I'm sure he's got some good leadership skills. And that's me just guessing based on his career. But I do think that – go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is – I want to get you back on to talk about the draft at some point because you said something that was interesting, which is you're not convinced that there's a whole lot of impact guys or that this is a high-end tight end draft. So maybe we could do that in the coming couple weeks when you watch all those guys. But I'm curious, if you're putting together like a depth chart right now, what does it look like? And if they don't make any moves that impact the depth chart, who's the leader in pass-catching tight end opportunities, you know, targets, catches? Who's their best blocking tight end? How would you say you'd sort that out?
So to me, just looking at it, just like you said, the number one pass catching threat is Logan Thomas, obviously. And to me, I could see him, like, I was thinking about it last night. It's funny you asked me, like, he could end up with, you know, between 45 and 55 catches this year, depending on how they utilize him. And I do think, like, so much of catching the ball is just how you're featured in an offense. And right now you look at this offense and there's not a ton of offensive weapons, you know. And I do think that, like, he gives you some flexibility. He gives you, like, a matchup issue. So why not utilize him? And I keep getting drawn back to Greg Olsen. Obviously, their play styles are very different. Greg Olsen's, you know, potential Hall of Famer type thing. So I don't want to get anybody thinking that we're making a one-to-one comparison here. But in terms of skill set, it's comparable. He's big. He's long. He runs really well. He can beat a linebacker. He can beat a safety. And that's exciting. And especially, with, like, you know, we talked about his contract the other day. Like, they paid him, I think, like $2.5 million guaranteed, something like that. And to me, that shows that they believe in him, that you expect that guy to make the roster. You expect him to be a contributor kind of at minimum dollar. Like, they just signed Nick Bennett, who is going to start for Denver to a very comparable deal. You know what I mean? Like, so that's the way I look at it. They might try to bring in somebody else. I don't know who it would be. I would expect it to be like a more established Y type player. There's a couple of guys like that out there, but, you know, then in terms of the run game, I really think it comes down to how they look at Sprinkles and, like, can he improve? Like, he's a little tight in his hips. He's a little long-legged. He has a hard time kind of getting his leverages, but does well with certain things. And if that's what they want him to do, those specific things that he's good at, I could see him being the guy because he's younger, he runs well, he's still under contract, and I know the scouting department in Washington really likes him. And then if that doesn't work out for whatever reason, Rodgers, I think, is a very capable player and I think could surprise a lot of people.
Logan, thank you, buddy. Very thorough, great information as always. I hope you're staying safe, pal.
Well there. Good information from Logan Paulson on Logan Thomas and the rest of the Redskins tight ends. Next, let's get into the idea that even if player suspensions carry over, the executive and the manager of the Astros who got suspended for this season will not be penalized next year if no baseball is played. You're listening to The Fan. G&D 106.7 The Fan. We are on Twitter, at Grant H. Paulson for me.
Yeah, Funny Danny for me.
Former Houston Astros manager A.J. Hinch and general manager Jeff Luhnow will satisfy their one-year suspensions even if the 2020 Major League Baseball season is canceled in its entirety, according to Buster Olney's breaking news yesterday. Rob Manfred, on January 13th, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, handed down an unprecedented punishment, and it left those two suspended for 1 year. Now, they subsequently got fired by the Houston Astros and their owner, Jim Crane. That had nothing to do, obviously, with the suspension. I mean, it was directly related to the suspension, but it didn't mean that their suspension was easier to satisfy. They were out of baseball. They still had to serve that suspension while out of baseball this year. But what if there are no games this year? It would just stand to reason. Common sense, Danny, would make you think that if there is no season and you're suspended one season, that doesn't count for your suspension. Because what did you get suspended from if there was nothing? It's like saying you're not allowed to go out to eat with us the next time we go out to eat. And then we don't go out to eat, but because someone ate a meal at home, next time you go out to eat, they eat with you anyway. Per ESPN, because their respective suspensions are linked to the end of the 2020 postseason in terms of the wording used by the commissioner, and not based on a one-season suspension, but rather suspended until the end of the 2020 postseason, they are eligible to return to the sport regardless of what happens this year in 2021. To my knowledge, this is not the case for the players, Danny. The players who are suspended at the end of this season or have to miss games, those suspensions will carry over. And I ask you, how on earth is the commissioner going to sell this one?
Man, oh, man. It just stubbed his toe again. I mean, this is basically a technicality or the wording, right? Because obviously nobody anticipated this. All of this, the shenanigans happening, all of the, cancellations, postponements, whatever you want to call it. So they just thought, hey, we have normal language. And now, as you're starting to look at it, letter of the law says 2020 season, even if there is no season, right? So I don't know how you sell it. You can't go back and change it because everybody already signed, sealed, delivered, and it's been agreed to. But man, oh man, it just looks like the bungling of the commissioner's office on this situation is right up there. And again, people aren't going to be as offended by it because it's not, you know, an issue near and dear to our hearts, like what happened with Ray Rice and domestic violence. And obviously, sign stealing is not anywhere near as societal and ill as domestic violence. But the level of ineptitude is right there in terms of in that part of it. It's Congress. It's the same level of whoopsie daisy. We thought it would be a different reaction, and nobody seemed to anticipate how poorly this would be received and how it would go. This is just another log on that fire pile. I mean, it really is bad. I don't know. I don't know how you see
out. You know, maybe here's how he gets out of it, or at least looks better, is he can point to the fact, based on the deal struck with the Players Association, that they are acting like the year happened in the way of contracts. Because we already know that a group of players, including Mookie Betts, Trevor Bauer, George Springer, and Marcus Stroman, among others, are eligible to become free agents next winter as if they played the entire season, and the final year of their deal is going to expire anyway. So he could point to the idea of, look, business is moving forward. This was a strange circumstance we didn't see coming. Perhaps we would have used different verbiage or diction. We didn't do that. But in the meantime, it's only fair because you guys are getting your big paydays. You're all getting a closer year toward free agency. I mean, maybe that's the way he pushes it to the players so that they feel like there's some fairness here.
Well, to the players, I think that'll be fine because they've gotten what they wanted basically out of it, which is the year of service time. They want all this to count, and that's
not suspended players though.
Well, yeah, but
they're
going
to be upset.
Well, I guess where I'm going with it is the sell to the public. With all due respect, I don't care about that. I don't care if Trey Turner's another year closer to free agency. That doesn't make me that excited. You know what I mean? I'm not that excited that a year of inexpensive Juan Soto just got taken away from us.
Yeah, if you do care about it, it's because you don't like it, because it's a bad thing for you.
I get why players want it. I Don't care about that in terms of my hierarchy. All the public wants, baseball fans, sports fans, people that don't generally care about this stuff, like my wife, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, people that do not care want the people responsible punished. This is so simple. Everybody just wants punishment. Everyone wants some kind of contrition. Everyone wants a real, genuine apology from the Houston Astros, not thumbing their nose, not this that bizarre press conference where Dusty Baker was there for some reason. Everybody just wants the same thing, and Major League Baseball is not going to deliver it. And this is just another reminder of that. They could sell this internally, and that's cute. That's adorable. The public is going to continue to want the thing we've wanted from Jump Street, punishment. Please start punishing people. Please err on the side of maybe over-punishing initially, just because these are the guys that got caught with their pantaloons down. Let's just punish somebody. Instead, the opposite's going to happen. Guys are going to get off scot-free without ever having actually served any time.
So let's pose that point that you just made as a question to our listeners, and we can open up the phones on this at 800-636-1067. If, in fact, Luno and Hinch have their suspensions executed while no games are played, and the next baseball game that is actually played, let's just hypothetically say, is opening day 2021, about a year from now, and Hinch is on a bench as a manager, and Luno's working in somebody's front office. Not going to be running one, obviously, again, but he's working in a front office in some capacity. Will you feel like they got a deserving one-year punishment because they weren't in baseball for the buildup this spring, and they won't be in the game for whatever happens in the coming several months, and because they did actually get fired after being suspended? Will you feel like they got a just punishment? 800-636-1067, or would you feel like they got off, as Danny just said, scot-free, essentially not having had served any time? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Plus, one of the best Olympians of all time could pay a huge price for the Olympic Games being pushed back 1 year. Maybe we won't see them compete again. We'll tell you who next right here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Danny saying he heard Fiona last segment. Can anyone else confirm that? Do we have a second person? Thom says he didn't. He's kind of been the judge on this.
So I'm not going to go hard with it. I thought I heard the yapping in the background, but it could just be in the headphones. If it didn't make it to air, I don't think it counts, right?
All right, so still 4 for Fiona, 1 for Byron, 0 for Bill. And neither of our wives have shown up on the air just yet. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show, our buddy D'Angelo Hall, longtime friend of the program. D'Angelo, we're keeping track because we're now broadcasting from our basements of how often our pets and our family members end up on the show. Times have gotten weird, man. How are you and the family holding up?
I'm doing pretty good. The family's holding up well. My wife, as soon as I get off the phone, we'll be doing a little homework with the kids, but just trying to stay in a regular routine. I have been getting out social distancing on the golf course, which has been a little fun. So, we're all doing good over here.
Good. Stay safe, man. And we look forward to seeing you out at a football field soon, very, very near future. But wanted to get you on because we saw your comments on NFL Network, and I'm sure you've seen they've taken on a life of their own. So I guess let's just start with your thoughts that, and look, you're not the first person to say this. It's something Danny and I have been talking about on the show for many days now, which is Kyle Allen knows this offense. It's going to be an odd offseason. He could push Dwayne Haskins. I mean, where are you at on whether there's going to be a quarterback competition or not? Because you seem a little worried for Haskins keeping the job.
Oh, yeah. I'm absolutely worried for Haskins keeping the job because I want to see this organization in a good place in 5 years, in 10 years, and, in the next 2-3 years, not necessarily just next season. And so if you think about how this offseason already has unfolded, it's very similar to the year of the lockout where you're not going to get a lot of time with your teammates is looking like. And so knowing that Kyle Allen has the advantage of knowing this offense, having played in meaningful games, with this coaching staff, those guys trust him. And, to bring him into a quarterback room that, that has Dwayne Haskins, a young, impressionable player who's still trying to figure out who he is as a player in this league, who had great success in college. I've always felt like if you're going to give the keys to a guy, give the keys to the guy. Don't put anybody behind them, especially in this situation. That's going to just cause any type of distraction or any added pressure to Dwayne Haskins. And bringing in a guy like Kyle Allen, does he help his football team? Absolutely. Will he hurt in some way Dwayne Haskins' progression? I think so.
So let's drill down on the Haskins part of this, D. Hall. I heard from your comments that we played from television the other day. It sounds like I might be higher on Haskins than you are initially. I thought he was put in as adverse a situation a young quarterback could be put into last year, and we saw improvement in all areas, whether it was maturity, sounds like study habits, and everything that it takes to be an NFL player, and it kind of matched what we saw on field as he got more comfortable as the season progressed. But it doesn't sound like you're that high on him. Am I off base there in your assessment?
Yeah, I think you're off base. No, I'm extremely high on Dwayne Haskins. I, from the jump, wanted this kid out there on the football field because, having played against young quarterbacks and having seen young quarterbacks firsthand, to be really, really successful. Yeah, you can sit and wait. And I know, there's a lot of comparisons out there, for guys who have sat and waited. But just, in today's passing league, I just feel like I want my guy to get on the job experience, on the job training. I want him thrown out there. And let's see, unless he just shows us that he's not capable to do that. I felt like Dwayne Haskins never got that opportunity. And then when he was actually thrown into it, it was because, you fired your coach and then you got a replacement coach. And, it just never was that synergy that you wanted from a guy who was a first-round draft pick. I'm of the belief if you draft a guy in the first round, he's going to play. You believe in him. I would have liked everyone to just rally behind Dwayne Haskins. Even now, you have Ron Rivera, who's, a very respected coach in this league, has won Coach of the Year several times. For him to get this job, knowing that Dwayne Haskins is Dan Snyder's guy, or at least he was, that's why we drafted him. And to bring in a guy like Kyle Allen, who Kyle essentially ran the MVP Cam Newton out of town. I think a lot of people forget that. I can remember working for the network, and we had legitimate arguments and discussions about Kyle Allen being a better quarterback in Norv at the time, but now Scott. But in his offense, better than Cam Newton was. And so, for us to just sit here and think that Dwayne Haskins is just going to win this job, I think it's going to be tough for Dwayne Haskins to win this job just because, like I said, Kyle Allen's experience in this offense, his experience with his coaching staff. Ron Rivera, for everyone who likes him, and like I said, I really like him. I had a chance to meet him. He's a different type of coach. Quentin Dunbar didn't want to get behind that type of coach. He's gone. Trent Williams, as you see, doesn't really want to get behind that type of coach. He's going to be gone. Is Dwayne Haskins going to fall in line exactly with what Ron Rivera wants in his players? We know Kyle Allen is. And so it's just a lot of other variables that come into play, not just can he throw the football down the field, can he run this offense?
That's a good point. And it's interesting to think of it that way. D'Angelo Hall joining us on Grant and Danny. I referenced earlier, by the way, Danny, that piece I wrote for The Athletic with Standig and Tarek on all the best number wearers in D.C. in the last 50 years. D'Angelo Hall, actually, at number 23 was our nomination for that number over the last 50 years, and he's joining us here on 106.7 The Fan. Real quick before I let you go, react to this, because this is what I said on the air when we played that clip. Everything you said to me is what I would have said if they went and brought in, like, a guy who's as good as Haskins, whether that be Cam or Winston or, like, a distraction type. To me, Kyle Allen's a little bit more of, like, a clipboard-holding visor guy, that he doesn't necessarily have to look over his shoulder. Do you buy that or no?
Well, no, I don't buy that, Grant. And the reason I don't buy that is Kyle Allen went up and down last year, right? We can say, when he first got in for Carolina, he played so well. Like I said, those conversations were, hey, this offense looks really good with Kyle Allen, a little bit better than the deal with Cam Newton. And so, the way Ron Rivera is going to play is going to be running the football. It's going to be playing really, really dominant defense. It's not going to be trying to throw this ball all over the football field and beat teams throwing the ball through the air. It's going to be running the football, showing how dominant they are defensively. That's the way Carolina made it to a Super Bowl. And so, You know, and Cam won an MVP playing that style where he took his shots downfield, and he was able to give the ball to his linebackers and some of the running backs out the backfield, and they were able to make plays. It wasn't just throwing it all over the field. And so, you know, I think Kyle's very capable to go out here and win a lot of football games. I was one of the people during the season last year who said, hey, this young kid is showing me a lot of things, kind of like Garner Minshew showed me a lot of things, because they were guys that I didn't know a whole lot about. That really came out there and showed us that no matter where you drafted, if you give a kid the opportunity and they've proven that they are winners, you got a chance to win in this league. And so, you know, I think Dwayne Haskins absolutely has a chance to win in this league. It's just the only question I would pose, Grant and Danny. If I was a GM in that front office, I would not have tried to put another guy who would compete with Dwayne Haskins and really have it down to the wire. Just because, like I said, I want this guy to be the guy. And not saying that he won't rise to the occasion, I just want to let this guy know, look, man, nobody showed you they loved you before. I'm showing you I love you and you are my guy, period. That's what he did with Cam Newton. That's why Cam Newton and Ron Rivera's relationship was so close. That's what I would have liked to see happen. It, you know, being a player, when you have a guy, a coach, who ultimately puts that trust and love in you as a player, you do not want to let him down. Him down. Not yourself, not your teammate. You don't want to let him down. And so I would have liked Dwayne Haskins to start to develop that relationship. Now Dwayne Haskins has the feelings, or at least I would have the feelings of, man, this dude don't believe in me either. I'm going to prove him wrong. It's not saying one way is better or the other, but I want to build him up with love, not have a chip on his shoulder. And, you know, I might need Dwayne Haskins. If Dwayne Haskins goes out and balls and Ron Rivera's job on the line, you think Dwayne Haskins going to walk into the office and say, hey, Dan Snyder, I want to keep Ron here? Nah, Ron ain't believe in me, just like Jay didn't believe in me. Bring the next guy in here. And so I want to create a synergy in that locker room, in that front office, on this team, that everyone has each other's back and they're all trying to develop and help each other grow. As players and coaches, man, that's the only way you get better as an organization. We all have to try to be on the same page, because I know if I'm balling for my quarterback coach, he's going to eventually be an OC. If I'm balling for that OC is going to be a head coach. That's the way the revolving door works. That's why Jordan Reed, who balled for Sean McVay as a tight end, is still getting calls to go play for Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay in L.A. and San Fran. It's those relationships you develop. With those players that continue to carry on.
Dion, awesome, man. Really appreciate you hopping on short notice, buddy. Great stuff, and stay safe, okay?
Oh, I appreciate you guys. Thanks.
You can see why he left us for the big time now out there in L.A. on NFL Network, but we always enjoy having him on the air on Grant and Danny. D'Angelo Hall, always wonderful, here on 106.7 The Fan. We will wrap up the show next. I want to talk about that Olympian who could be out of luck now and not get to participate one final time, but also couple more thoughts on Hinch, Luno, and those suspensions for the Astros that could be upheld even if there are no games. You're listening to G&D on the Fan. Stretch run, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. A 104-year-old World War II veteran who survived the Spanish flu and the Great Depression, of course World War II as well, has recovered from getting coronavirus just in time to celebrate his birthday. He is celebrating, I guess it's 104, although it might be turning 105. When he hit 101, 200 people showed up and partied with him. He lives at a facility for veterans. But because nobody can visit the facility right now, there was a social distancing party outside his window. I'm looking at the story here via CBS News. But he just beat coronavirus, and he has been deemed healthy now.
You see, remember, we started the show with Tony Baselli, like the peak of physicality, right?
Yep.
Being, you know, knocked on his duff and, you know, hopefully on his way to recovery, right? 105-year-old dude. You know what I mean? Like, with all due respect to that guy, obviously of hearty stock, he's been through an awful lot. 105-year-old person recovering from this thing. And then, you know, then you'll see the story later on today about somebody that was in the peak of health that didn't. I'm not trying to make light of it. Just saying there's a randomness to it that's, you know, both – maybe confidence building at times and also scary at times. So it should be respected, but it's also, you got to know that it's not necessarily one-to-one who and what happens.
Yeah, nobody knows what's going on or how long it takes to get out of your body. I think every situation is just different and to your point, somewhat random. So Simone Biles was going to participate in Tokyo in 2020. There was originally some concern she may not, because female gymnasts have a small window of time that they compete. At age 23, that is almost considered old, right?
Amazing?
In female female Olympic gymnast time frame. Like 23 means you're at the end of the road. It's almost like being a 43-year-old quarterback or something. With the Olympics being pushed back a year now, she's considering the idea that she may not get to compete.
Wow.
What she's saying, I am still taking it day by day to see if I'll continue or what's going to happen. Mentally, I don't know if I can handle it. It's going to be hard. I was already battling with myself if I could do it this year, she told the New York Times. So
Wow. We
were going to get one more chance to watch Simone Biles, who's the most decorated gymnast in the history of the Olympics. That may not be the case, and this is just an example. I bring her up to talk about a bigger story, which is all of the people who may not get to participate next year, either based on their athleticism changing or their age or something being altered in the next calendar year. I'm sure if you did already qualify, it'll carry over. Some qualifications hadn't even started yet, but maybe we will not see Simone Biles.
It's nowhere near the big picture, blah, 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 we're a sports show. Okay, so there's your usual caveat, okay? But, yeah, that is absolutely a thing. I mean, I remember I was friends with a bunch of the gymnasts in college. You know, just our schedules running mirror to each other. I'd see them all the time. And, you know, I ended up learning more about gymnastics than I ever thought I would just through talking to them. And the injury rate for those girls was outrageously high. There wasn't one of them that made it through a full year without having something from mildly serious to, you know, potentially career ending in terms of surgeries, things that kept them out so long. And I kind of, you know, obviously they're doing these like depth defying stunts on a, you know, daily basis on these various apparatuses. And then it occurred to me, when you look at the Olympics, it's everybody's 13 to 17 basically. And so in finding out why, it was that once your body fully matures and, you know, bones start to harden in such a way that in the joints and the tendons, you're just more at risk. It's hard to be as flexible and malleable as you were, you know, as a, you know, still sort of, you know, building and developing teenager. That's what's so crazy about, you know, you watch these people with this immense pressure and they can't even drive a car yet. You know, like these at this the highest level ever. It's like, yeah, she's 15. She's on the older side. It's really amazing.
It is. So it's also amazing the success that Dabo Swinney's had at Clemson. He says the college football season is going to start on time. Quote, my preference is let's get to work and go play. That's the best case scenario, and I think that's what's going to happen. I don't have any doubt. I have zero doubt that we're going to be playing and the stands are going to be packed, end quote. Maybe this is just him doing an optimism bit where he's trying to act like there's no issue here. I kind of file this into the President Donald Trump saying that we're all going to be back at church and living our lives by Easter before walking that back soon thereafter. I'm not so sure if I'm buying this one, Danny, that we're all going to be packing the stadiums for college football in the final weekend of August. But, man, do I hope Dabo's right.
Yeah, cut to Clemson fans being like, well, Dabo's decreed it. It's what's going to happen. Dabo said so. That means we're going to play. You know what I mean? Like, he's that good of a coach. He can will.
I hope we don't get 86 tweets that I'm tagged on from that guy who doesn't like your country accent when you talk about college football fans.
That's a Clemson fan. They're in South Carolina, for goodness sakes.
Remember, do you remember that guy?
Of course
I was like
I
arguing with that guy. He's like, I went to the school of comedy of Dave Chappelle. And I was like, no, you did not.
You didn't graduate. You must have dropped out, bro.
You dropped out, pal. If you're offended because Danny does a voice that sounds like someone from the South, don't tell me you went to Dave Chappelle school because you failed all the classes.
Yeah, my family's from the South.
Case.
We're all right. We'll be okay.
This weekend, we've got one assignment. Obviously, we've got a movie to watch, the Movie Club. Going to be watching Molly's Game. What else do you guys have on the slate as you try to live your lives at home?
Got myself a radio program with Pete Medhurst on Sunday at noon. Other than that, we're just, you know, we're looking for activities. We don't see anybody else, man. We'll probably go for a little hike or something on Saturday. It's supposed to be nice.
Big thanks to Tom and to Brendan in our studios on Half Street. For Danny, I'm Grant, saying so long. Chad Duke versus the world is next. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us and listening.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.